3. Since the visible things are temporary, but the invisible things are eternal, let us strive for the latter. Indeed, we have no excuse if we choose the temporary over the eternal. While the present may be enjoyable, it is still fleeting, while the pain it brings is lasting and irrevocable. Those who have been privileged enough to receive the Spirit and experience such a great gift have no excuse if they become so fixated on temporal things that they lose sight of the eternal. Sadly, I often hear people uttering disrespectful phrases like, "Give me today and take tomorrow." They argue, if there are indeed such things in the afterlife as you suggest, then it's an equally valid trade, one for one. But if there are no such things, then I've gained two for nothing. What could be more sacrilegious than these words? What baseless chatter! We are discussing heaven and the indescribable blessings found there, and you are reducing it to horse race betting. Are you not ashamed to be so held captive by the fleeting pleasures of present life? Won't you stop acting so foolishly, tragically throwing away your youth in frivolous pursuits? It would be less surprising to hear such words from non-believers, but it is profoundly disheartening when they come from those who profess faith. Those who harbor such skepticism and doubt about our eternal hopes are incurring guilt that may be unforgivable. But who has returned, someone might ask, and reported on what is there in the afterlife? While no human can do so, God Himself, more trustworthy than any other, has declared this truth. But you protest that you cannot see God or heaven directly. Does that mean you will deny the existence of God because you cannot see Him? No, you argue. I firmly believe there is a God. But suppose a non-believer asks you, who came from heaven and verified the existence of God? What would you say? How do you know there is a God? By observing the visible world, you explain, and inferring from the beauty and order of creation a truth that is evident to everyone. Therefore, in the same way, accept also the doctrine of the final judgment. But how? You ask. Let me question you, and you answer me. Is God just? Will He reward or punish each person according to what they deserve? Or, on the other hand, does He arbitrarily bless the wicked with joy and prosperity while making the righteous suffer? Certainly not, you respond. Even a human would not find this fair. Given this truth, it follows that there must be a place of eternal reward for those who have lived righteously, and a place of eternal punishment for the wicked. The stakes are equal, one to one, not two for one. However, as we delve deeper, we'll find that it's only those who have lived a life of virtue and righteousness who can say, I've gained two for one. This is in stark contrast to the reckless sinners who experience only loss. Keep in mind that those living in luxury and excess here on earth are often more miserable than those who live a virtuous life. Let's take a well-known example, the rich man and Lazarus. The rich man relished his earthly comforts while Lazarus suffered, but looked forward to eternal comfort. Is it fair to say that it is equal, one for one, to experience finite suffering and then to live eternally in happiness, or to enjoy brief worldly pleasures and then undergo eternal torment? It is crystal clear that one's behavior in this life has lasting consequences in the future. This is not a matter of differing opinions. It's a universal truth recognized by everyone, believers and non-believers alike. Ultimately, this highlights the importance of aiming for the eternal, as opposed to the fleeting and temporary delights of this world. So let's strive for eternity and avoid becoming so ensnared by the earthly that we miss out on the everlasting.